AM 245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Three U.S. officials confirming to ABC News that Iran-backed militants and operations were targeted today.
The airstrikes in Yemen marking the next wave of retaliatory strikes following the drone attack in Jordan that killed three U.S. service members. U.S. officials say that is in addition to the six anti-ship missiles that were taken out also in Yemen earlier and related to the Iranian-backed Houthi militant attacks on commercial shipping in the Red Sea. It follows Friday's initial response where the U.S. struck dozens of targets in Iraq and Syria. Michelle Franz in ABC News.
The first Democratic presidential primary of the presidential election cycle is underway in South Carolina. President Biden expecting an easy win. The president returning to Southern California today for fundraising. This as California braces for more torrential rain. Warnings for life-threatening flash flooding and mudslides. Evacuation orders have been issued for parts of two counties. This is ABC News. In Michigan Monday, deliberation set to begin in the involuntary manslaughter trial of a woman whose son opened deadly fire at Oxford High School in 2021. ABC's Trevor Ault is in Pontiac.
The jury will soon decide the fate of the first parent of a school shooter to stand trial herself. In the final day of testimony Friday, Jennifer Crumbly facing intense cross-examination.
He consistently had a desire to obtain a weapon.
I know they consistently talked about it, correct? Okay.
Crumbly is charged with four counts of involuntary manslaughter, one count for each classmate her son killed. Prosecutors allege she missed crucial warning signs about his mental health while also gifting him the gun he used in the rampage.
Crumbly's husband faces trial next month. Today marks 1 year since the toxic train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio. Norfolk Southern and the EPA have taken 45,000 samples. No reading or results for the contaminants have been found above actionable levels. The final NTSB report is expected later this year. Dave Packer, ABC News.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
The story of Black History Month starts in Chicago. It's 1915 and thousands are there to celebrate. 50 years since the Emancipation Proclamation and the end of slavery. The gathering also inspires civic organizations to uncover the many achievements of Black citizens. By 1926, the celebration of African American history is official. This also is a time for rising racial pride. The Black middle class is expanding, and industrial cities like Milwaukee are luring African Americans with good jobs. There's so much more to tell you. Listen for the next Black History Month story here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Artificial intelligence could be used to meddle in this year's elections. As Eric Tegedoff reports, it could cause voters to mistrust all information, even the truth.
Before the New Hampshire primary, a robocall imitating President Joe Biden called voters and told them not to vote. It's seen as a potential preview of what voters could be in for as the 2024 general election approaches. Rachel Ori is the Senior Associate Director of the Bipartisan Policy Center's Elections Project. She says AI could have other consequences.
Our bigger concern is what's known as a liar's dividend, that the presence of false information makes voters trust any information less.
Ori says the past few years have seen a near constant assault on accurate voting information, which has made it challenging for good information to reach voters. Ori says AI could supercharge the misinformation campaigns that have existed for years. However, election officials across the country have a leg up going into the 2024 vote.
Election officials and voting advocates around the country are sort of well prepared to mitigate and respond to increases in misinformation because they spent the last couple of years flexing that muscle and learning how to respond to misinformation and election denial campaigns.
Ori says election officials should have a plan ready to respond to AI misinformation campaigns. She says there likely aren't any regulatory options available at the moment to stop these operations.
Technology is maybe growing faster than the regulatory tools we have available. So at present, it seems difficult to find a policy that the government could adopt and make these robocalls impossible.
Ori says another concern is targeted campaigns that use a voter's personal information to persuade them not to vote, although there aren't any documented instances of this happening yet. I'm Eric Tegedoff. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Hey, everybody, this is Aaron from the Todd Allbaugh Show, just letting you know that Todd will be back on Monday with a brand new show. So tune in then from noon to 2.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy tonight, some patchy areas of fog and lows in the mid-20s. A mixture of sunshine and clouds for tomorrow, highs to the mid-40s. And creeping to the upper 40s with a mostly sunny sky on Monday and Tuesday. Currently 35 degrees.
Hayward's choice for news, talk, and sports. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Up next on this weekend's edition of the Civic Media Spotlight, we go to Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, where Pete sat down and interviewed Mike Siegel. Enjoy.
Where would you go? That's the question. In the spirit of National Plan a Vacation Day, if you could go anywhere in the world at no cost, where would you go? So far, we've heard the Galapagos Islands. That was from the Cayman. And Conrad's mom, she chimed in a little earlier tonight, Conrad. She says she'd take an around-the-world cruise, and then a friend of mine just texted, Spain. I got a cousin. My cousin Danny Griffin has lived in Spain for like 40 years. And it's been a really good gig. He married a girl there, so Spain sounds great, but we can ask all of this to our next guest, who has been around the world, and he can give us lots of tips on our question of the night. He is Mike Siegel, and he joins us now. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Pete. Hey, is the Spanish Springsteen, is his nickname El Jefe?
Well, since I don't speak Spanish.
That means the Spanish for the boss. Okay. See, now it's lost on you. That's lost on you,
Listen,
Pete.
Most American jokes are lost on me. I don't you expect me to get like a bilingual joke? Mike was here last week. I kind of felt rushed. He's a very old friend, and we go back a long way. He's had a great experience in show business, and I felt like we were too rushed last week. We didn't get the stuff, so we'll just take our time tonight and talk to Mike a little bit. Great to have you back. Thanks for joining me, Mike.
It's always great to see you, and this was fun doing it. I'm sorry we got cut short last time, but now that you're talking about travel, you're right up my alley.
I know. Why don't we...
of the longtime Travel Tales podcast. Where do you want to go? Where would you go, Pete?
Why don't...
unlimited,
you know,
funds?
I'll tell you what, a couple of years ago, it was kind of like, what do I do? I missed California. I love living in Wisconsin, though. It's the people here are great. You get a lot for your money. We could talk about that, too, because you hosted a show.
Yeah, right.
Wisconsin's beautiful. I grew up part of my child in Chicago. I was like, where do I go now? Like, if I was up for a new adventure, and we talked about Portugal, because at the time, it was considered kind of affordable, and it's, I think, is it tropical, Mike? I don't know. I know it's right in the ocean.
No, I love Portugal. I've been there a couple of times, and it's now, since COVID especially, it's been found out by expats. It's like booming. It's like California weather, basically. It's kind of dry. Oh, wow. It's Mediterranean. Yeah. So you're right on the coast, and, with the lifestyle of Spain or Italy and stuff, but immigrating there was a lot easier with a lot less red tape. And once that's been found out in the last 10 years, it's just prices have gone up. Getting in is a little bit harder now, but it's, I love it. And I could live there very easily.
Okay.
It's very, very nice.
Is it, where's the new Portugal, the place people haven't found yet?
Well, if you look in like Central America and stuff, like Costa Rica has been found out. Panama is kind of booming. Now that's kind of the next place where a lot of Americans are going to Nicaragua, even places like that. But then you run into kind of politics and
right.
things like that. Croatia is also big. Medical tourism is very big. You know, as Americans,
we don't get
health insurance. So it's funny when you go to like Istanbul in Turkey, you see all these middle-aged guys walking around with head wraps on their head, like bandages. And I was like, what the hell's going on? Was there a big street fight that I didn't know about? But
did I miss a street fight?
Yeah. Turns out it's like the number one place for hair transplants.
Oh, really?
Around the world. So people come from around the world to get hair transplants in Istanbul. So you walk around downtown Istanbul and it's just guys with head bandages all over the place.
Lots of plugs.
Yeah, a lot of them.
That's pretty cool. What's the weather like in Croatia, though? Is that, if I'm going anywhere, if I'm leaving Wisconsin,
it's Mediterranean, so it's beautiful. You know, it's just right across. It's right next to Italy, and you're right on the sea there, and it's gorgeous.
So I don't know if you heard this, Mike. 20 years from now, supposedly the number one place to live in the world, given climate change, will be Michigan. Honest to God, I read. I think it was in the New York Times.
I've heard these things, about fresh water.
Right, and it's a beautiful state to begin with. Their coast is great.
Yeah,
on all around the state, it's a big state. There's hills. It's very beautiful. I feel like we're next in line. Wisconsin, we're very similar to Michigan climate. Sure. We've got fresh water, but 20 years from now, I'm going to be 141. I don't know if I want to wait that. No. Have you heard that? It's like, because we have fresh water here, I mean, we have to protect it. The PFAS are an issue in the Midwest, but that could be kind of cool.
I have heard that, and Minnesota as well.
Yeah,
people are going up there. It's going to be interesting to see how it's going to change. You're already finding people that in places like Palm Springs, where I know your parents go to a lot.
Yeah,
you know, the summers, it's just getting hotter and hotter and hotter. We worry about fires out here. You remember.
Sure.
California. Now there's a whole fire season. It wasn't too bad this year, but it's bad. I had friends who live in Sonoma up in wine country, and they finally had to leave because they were tired of evacuating for like either smoke or actual fire came right to their door. Just like after a couple of years of that, she was just like, nope, I'm done.
Wow. But, well,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just heard the weather before I got on here and it was going to be, what, 45 this week?
With the amount of days it's been 40 in January in Northeast Wisconsin is a little scary. I'm soaking it up, loving it. There's nothing I can do to change it, so I'm going to enjoy it. But it is a little scary.
Right.
You know.
Is there snow on the ground there now?
There is, just only because about 3 weeks ago we got a really huge storm. But a lot of it's gone. I mean, it's been pretty crazy. And Minnesota is nice, but they're a bunch of copycatters. They like to do whatever Wisconsin does. So we don't.
Well, we noticed the difference in our lifetime, right? I mean,
Sure.
I grew up in Chicago, and I remember them snow being on the ground at least like all winter long. At least in different levels, but there was always something on the ground. And now I've gone back in February the last 10 years or so, and nothing on the ground. And it's still cold, but it just maybe get a snow and then it melts away within a week, and it's very strange. I had friends with snowmobiles and they finally got rid of them after a while because weren't using them.
Yeah, it's strange. I've noticed just since I've been back here 12 years ago, came back and it was frigid. There's a certain amount of time in January and February where it's like 0, 10. Those were the highs. And I said to my parents, was it always this cold? Like, I don't remember it being this cold. And they said, yeah. So I had been gone for, 15 years or whatever, and I got used to it when I got back. But that was just 12 years ago. I don't think we've had a winter like that in 6 or 7 years. So it's changed just in the last decade, I would say.
No, I've been scuba diving for the last 30 years, and what I've seen around the world are the reefs. It's sad. It's really sad. So, like, a lot of my new travels coming up, in the last few years have been about kind of like seeing nature when I could, because I've seen a lot of it disappear, the reefs bleaching and that kind of stuff. So, the water temperature's rising a little bit. It just throws the whole ecosystem off. So it's just, it's kind of sad, but see nature while you can, Pete.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
No, I will. My guest is Mike Siegel. He is the host of What You Get for the Money, If Walls Could Talk. He hosted Movie Break on TBS. There's pretty much not a show he hasn't hosted. So where would you go, Mike? You've been all over the place. I've seen the map you have in your office with all the thumbtacks you have all over the world. And I'm like, you don't even, where haven't you been and where do you want to go?
I still have right before COVID, I had about a dirty dozen list of countries that I still haven't been to. Egypt is a big one that I still haven't been to. Egypt and Morocco. And then, the Galapagos, as one of your fans mentioned. Yeah. That's a tough one to get to. So I've always wanted to go there. I had never been to mainland China. I've always wanted to see it, but I've been to like Hong Kong and Taiwan, which is kind of like China light, but it's not actual the mainland China. And, Russia was on that list, but it's looked like that's going to have to wait for a while.
Yeah.
as is a lot of stuff in the Middle East. You know, Egypt might have to wait a little bit. The Red Sea is not really one of the places I'm looking to go to at the moment.
Right.
You know, and I always tell people, it's just like, look, the last first time I left the country was in 89, and I went to Europe. And at that time, there was two Germanys. There was a Yugoslavia, a Czechoslovakia.
Yeah, no kidding. Wow.
I went through the Berlin Wall at Checkpoint Charlie. You know, things change quick. You know, people think it was so right. long ago, but it's not. So, and there's a couple of countries there like Myanmar that I've always wanted to go to that was only really open for like a short window. And I missed that window for a couple of years. They were opening up to tourists. And now like the military junta kind of took it back and it's closed again. But I've heard amazing things about it, but I've just, you know, you just never know. So if that was, and I went to Cuba when it was a little easier to get to.
Oh,
I still
nice.
Snuck in.
You took a boat to Cuba.
Yeah, well, I had to like fly in through Cancun. You didn't hear this from me though.
No,
like a
Conrad, we're recording this, right? Take a moment.
Right. But it was fascinating. Cuba is like really fascinating.
It's funny you use the word junta, which is spelled J-U-N-T-A, and I remember a classmate of mine in high school was reading and he said junta. Because he missed the lesson the day before where the rest of us learned how to pronounce it. Oh,
was so it, who's Jeff Bezos' wife now? Was it Lauren Sanchez?
Yeah, Lauren Sanchez.
Okay. Was it you that you were telling me you were watching when she was on the news out here? She said Marine Corps.
I think that's true. Maybe she meant corporations or she thought that's what she, I don't know. Yeah. That's hilarious. So tell people how they can find Travel Tales, the podcast.
We're on wherever you get your podcasts, and I'm at Travel Tales Podcast on Instagram. It's probably the best way to find us. But wherever you get your podcasts, you know, listen up and sign up. We have new guests all the time. We got to get you back on there to talk Wisconsin, buddy.
Yeah, I've been three places, Chicago, Wisconsin, and L.A. I'm not. I mean, I've been all over America, but I haven't. Oh, in Montreal. I was in Montreal and Winnipeg. Montreal was about as international as I got, I guess.
I love Montreal. Vancouver is one of my favorite cities in North America. Vancouver is great. And I just went to Montreal. That was another one that was on my list. I had never been to Toronto, the biggest city in Canada. I've been to like all around the Maritime Islands. I've been to like Prince Edward Island. I've been to Halifax. I've been all around there. And I've been up to like the Yukon territory and still hadn't been to Toronto. It's just, I had no reason to go. But then we just took a long weekend and went. We were out in Washington, D.C., my girlfriend and I. And then we said, you know what? Let's swing by Toronto in September. Went to a Blue Jays game. It was fun.
Nice.
Did all touristy stuff. Went up to the big tower. I loved it. It had a real Chicago vibe to it, which
really?
I know is a bad thing to say in Wisconsin. But
we love
I should
our
say
Chicago
I was born here. In Wisconsin. I was born in Wisconsin. I can
say you can say that. Yeah, so was Heather Graham. But
was she really?
Yeah, she was. It was her birthday yesterday. I had Brian Etting on to talk about Heather Graham because he did a movie with her. So I'm trying to do these little fun things where, like, if I know a weird tidbit or something, like on Jennifer Beals' birthday, I had Pete Moore on the show for a few minutes because he kissed her.
Oh, great.
In a play.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so Pete told us that story. So all these little stories, all this knowledge I have in my head, I got to find a way to use it somehow. Okay, so we'll talk more when we come back. Coming up next, I want to ask you where the best place you've been is. So you just told us where we could find the travel. And then I want to talk to you about the Bodines concert we saw in Indianapolis.
Oh, my God.
And that night, which is one of the longest of my life. And we'll talk about that with Mike Siegel. This is Pete Schwabe. You're listening to Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday evenings from 8 till 10. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matt Flynn Direct.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
You cannot talk about Black history without including some of the early music and art which flourished in the 1920s and 30s. Time now called the Harlem Renaissance. But this new Black cultural identity was growing everywhere. Trumpet player Louis Armstrong moved to Chicago. Painter Henry Tanner was accepted into the Academy of Design. Musician Robert Johnson recorded Delta Blues in Texas. Listen for another Black History story right here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. You can take the spotlight with you wherever you go this weekend by downloading the Civic Media app wherever apps are downloaded on your smartphones or other devices. Head over to the Apple App Store or Google Play Store, type in Civic Media, it's free, easy to download, and you can take us with you wherever you go. Up next on our trip around the network this weekend, we go to the Earl Ingram Show, where Earl is joined by Sandy Williams and Tom Conton, the executive director of the Citizens Utility Board, for a conversation around utility and energy prices.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, Texas, at that same number. Yes, Sean Hannity's rant about Taylor Swift came after exclusive polling conducted in Calvin. This is where you can find it. Newsweek by Redfield and Wilton Strategies found that 18% of voters said they're more likely or significantly more likely to vote for a candidate endorsed by Taylor Swift. Of all the respondents, 45% said they were fans of the singer and 54% said they were not. Only 6% said they were not familiar with who Taylor Swift was. Sean Hannity's response, maybe Taylor Swift just bought into all the lies about Republicans that they are racist and sexist and homophobic and xenophobic and transphobic and Islamophobic, and they want a total ban on abortion. If she believes that, she is believing a lie. Let's go to the phone lines and Tom from L.A. Hey, good morning to you, Tom. Your thoughts?
Good morning, Earl. First off, we the people ultimately are the government, and we must never forget that. They are so scared to death of her, and I hope they keep on talking about her, because she has over 94.8 million followers on Twitter. Is a self-made multi-millionaire.
Billionaire.
She's exactly what they, but she's self-made, grossing tour. She's had the highest grossing tour in history. She gave $55 million in bonuses to those she works with. She's helped thousands, 35,000 people registered to vote. And she's good to her fans. And and she's a Christian, and they are so scared of her because of the fact that she really hasn't. She just dipped her foot in politics because of what Marsha Blackburn in Tennessee said. I hope to hell she gets out there. And you know what's interesting? People are not voting for Taylor Swift just because she's Taylor Swift. They're voting for Taylor, or voting for Taylor's policies that she believes in. She believes in a woman's right to choose. She believes in gay rights. She believes in trans rights. She believes all these things. Now, you tell me, Sean Hannity, why would that be? Why would it be that we would think that Republicans don't like gays or trans people? Or, it couldn't be their policies, could it? Don't believe in a woman's right to choose? I mean, Sean, I'm confused, because everything you're saying is a lie. Your policies speak volumes in terms of who it is that the Republicans in power are. I'm not saying the Republican people. Now, if they're following Donald Trump, then yes. But I'm not saying the Republican voters out there, because I think some of them are very smart and they will vote Democratic and vote for Joe Biden because they see he's an honest, good man and that he's a results-oriented candidate and he's a workhorse, not a show horse. And that he's getting infrastructure done and he's getting it done for the small rural parts of Wisconsin at this point, the bridge and so, Superior. But the thing is, Taylor believes in, you know, she's a Christian.
Well, so Tom, here's what frightens them. Her influence is undeniable. She was seen on National Voter Registration Day this past September when she took to Instagram to urge her fans to register on nonpartisan, nonprofit vote.org. That led to a surge of more than 35,000 registrations and almost 25% jump on the previous year. She has that type of influence, and these are younger voters that clearly Republicans can't reach. And so that's what is frightening them. Thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Stephen in Green Bay. Good morning to you, Stephen. Your thoughts? Are you a Swiftie, by the way?
Actually, not as much anymore. I mean, I still do like her music, but when I was a teenager, I literally had posters of her plastered on my wall.
Yeah. Well, is your wife listening? Oh, okay.
No, she's not. Okay. with that being said, a couple things on Taylor Swift and then Sean Hannity's piece. First of all, I've said this a couple times on a couple different shows. Republicans are scared of strong, independent women, and Taylor Swift is one of those strong, independent women, so I'm not surprised that they're so triggered. But with this being said, what Sean Hannity came out and said live on TV, maybe he should go and look at the Republicans' voting record before he goes on live TV and makes a complete fool out of himself, because everything that he said that the Republicans aren't against, the voting record on the Republican side would say different. And Republicans have a really good track record of saying one thing and doing another. An example of that would be Mike Gallagher literally pleading Donald Trump to call off insurrectionists, and then after that saying that he wouldn't impeach Donald Trump. The Republicans love saying one thing, and then when it's time to vote on that one thing, doing a completely different thing.
Hey, Stephen, thank you very much for the call. We've got to go to a short hiatus. Stay on the phone lines. We'll reach you on the other side. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show.
Ingram Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 8 till 10. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. Rice Lake's choice for news, talk, and sports. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packard. Three U.S. officials confirming to ABC News that Iran-backed militants and operations were targeted today.
The airstrikes in Yemen marking the next wave of retaliatory strikes following the drone attack in Jordan that killed three U.S. service members. U.S. officials say that is in addition to the six anti-ship missiles that were taken out also in Yemen earlier and related to the Iranian-backed Houthi militant attacks on commercial shipping in the Red Sea. It follows Friday's initial response where the U.S. struck dozens of targets in Iraq and Syria. Michelle Franz in ABC News.
The first Democratic presidential primary of the presidential election cycle is underway in South Carolina. President Biden expecting an easy win. The president returning to Southern California today for fundraising. This as California braces for more torrential rain. Warnings for life-threatening flash flooding and mudslides. Evacuation orders have been issued for parts of two counties. This is ABC News.
The Brewers mega trade. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers traded their ace pitcher, Corbin Burns, Thursday night to the Baltimore Orioles for two players and a pick in the upcoming draft. The veteran pitcher was still upset after a team rep in a salary arbitration hearing last year claimed that Burns was the reason the team didn't reach the playoffs in 2022.
You know, it's tough to hear, it's tough to take, but, you know, they're trying to do what they can to win a hearing. But I think there was obviously other ways that they could have gone about it.
Nevertheless, he recently signed an extension with the crew through this year. So why trade him to Baltimore? General Manager Matt Arnold.
Look, anytime you trade a guy like Corbin, it's always a difficult decision. I think the overarching theme here is that we're excited about the players we're getting back. And the reality of our situation is that we had 1 year left with Corbin. I think Corbin had been pretty public about how this was going to be his last year as a Brewer.
That's the Brewers' Matt Arnold. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy tonight, some patchy areas of fog and lows in the mid-20s. A mixture of sunshine and clouds for tomorrow, highs to the mid-40s. And creeping to the upper 40s with a mostly sunny sky on Monday and Tuesday. Currently 35 degrees.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
The story of Black History Month starts in Chicago. It's 1915 and thousands are there to celebrate. 50 years since the Emancipation Proclamation and the end of slavery. The gathering also inspires civic organizations to uncover the many achievements of Black citizens. By 1926, the celebration of African American history is official. This also is a time for rising racial pride. The Black middle class is expanding, and industrial cities like Milwaukee are luring African Americans with good jobs. There's so much more to tell you. Listen for the next Black History Month story here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
You cannot talk about Black history without including some of the early music and art which flourished in the 1920s and 30s. Time now called the Harlem Renaissance. But this new Black cultural identity was growing everywhere. Trumpet player Louis Armstrong moved to Chicago. Painter Henry Tanner was accepted into the Academy of Design. Musician Robert Johnson recorded the Delta Blues in Texas. Listen for another Black History story right here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
Sawyer County's choice for news, talk, and sports. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
You're listening to the Civic Media Spotlight. Up next, we take a trip up to Lake Wissota with Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow for a conversation with retired teachers still championing education across the state of Wisconsin.
Hey, you can check out Civic Media's newest show, Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Plenty of entertainment, comedy, and pop culture news every weeknight from 8 to 10 p.m. live across the Civic Media Radio Network. And keep in mind as well, over on the Civic Courier Newsroom side of things, our parent company here at Up North News, you can go to couriernewsroom.com and subscribe to newsletters with political reporting from some of our favorite guests, including Mark Jacob, Kia Vakil, Carolyn Fiddler, and more. You can also find Mark Jacob here Friday mornings at 7:30 and at stopthepresses.news. So it's time for our homeroom segment where we highlight the work that people are doing to lift up our public schools, look out for their funding, their security, their success. And it turns out the more you talk about advocating for our public schools, the more you hear it's some of the retired educators who are working some of the hardest shifts and doing most with the public to help remind us of, you know, how much value is in public education. Other retirees, they just walk away. They head to a beach or a golf course or something. Not this bunch. We've got Mary Bell, a retired teacher from Sun Prairie, Tom Zagan, the president of WEAC Retired, and Tammy Johnson, a retired teacher in Wales as well. Good morning to all of you. Thank you for being here.
Good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Well, let's start, Tom, with WEAC Retired. Folks were certainly familiar with the Wisconsin Education Association Council, you know, otherwise known in some circles as the Big Bad Teachers Union for many years. But WEAC Retired is a formidable group on its own. Tell us more about it.
We are the Big Bad Retired Educational Group. That's right. So we are a community of retired educators. There are over 11,000 members who have chosen to be members of WEAC Retired. And we are an engaged community of retirees who want to still promote public and quality public education for the common good. And we're involved in all sorts of legislative, social justice, and racial justice issues.
And, you know, Mary, you were the head of WEAC for a time as well. So you didn't have to stay active like this, and yet here you are. Why do you and so many retired educators continue to stay active this way?
Because being a teacher, being involved, being active to advocate for public education, it's part of the DNA of this group of people. And I think a lot more people care about them, but they don't necessarily know from the inside what some of those issues are. And that's what we hope to continue to show. Particularly right now as a retired school library media specialist. The issues that are confronting both curriculum and library collections are too important to stay on the sidelines.
And there are so many different challenges, shall we say, right now. And Tammy, for example, you are on the NEA, the National Education Association Racial and Social Justice Committee. Mary, you co-chair the Racial and Social Justice Task Force for WEAC Retired. So Tammy, tell me more about that and the reason why you stay involved in some of these rather weighty, sometimes controversial issues.
Well, as a retired AP US government teacher, I taught about those issues. And so it was really important to me to be able to help people understand them. And I feel like in retirement, I wanted to continue that work, but from the outside of the classroom. And so NEA established this Racial and Social Justice Task Force, and Tom appointed me to that. And then we decided we could also do the same and take it maybe even further at the state level for the social justice task force that we have.
This is something that we talked to State Superintendent of Public Instruction, Jill Underley, about. Somebody who has not shied away from saying that we should have an emphasis on you know, diversity and inclusion in our schools, that there are people always wanting to push back, saying, you know, stick to the basics. But I think those are folks who have the privilege, quite frankly, of never being in a marginalized community. Tom, do you agree? Are you part of those that say, well, maybe there needs to be, you know, less talk of DEI and more focus on, you know, reading, writing, and arithmetic.
I think for those of us who have really worked in public education for many years, we realize that we are stronger together and that diversity is our strength. We are able to tap into so many of our members' strengths through what we know are their diverse abilities, strengths, and interests.
And then, Mary, you know, one of those issues that comes up is books, and you've got right-wing groups that are working so hard under the guise of either parents' rights or something else to basically attack books that they don't necessarily agree with. And I was really captivated by Dr. Underly, you know, putting that under a new umbrella, and that is the freedom to read. And so tell us about the importance of not just, you know, rolling over or rolling our eyes when people come in to challenge the books that are available in our libraries and classrooms.
Yeah, it's really important that we talk about why materials are selected and that everyone needs to feel represented. Parents certainly have a right to talk about what their children can read, but they don't represent all children and they don't represent all parents. And I think in the communities where they've come together to say, no, we want our children to have access to materials, they recognize that people need to be seen. People need to be recognized. People need to be honored for who and how they are. I grew up in a very small town. If I had not had a broad range of reading material where I could learn about other cultures and other people, it would have been a much, much more difficult transition to an adult life where I've been able to work and advocate for people around the country.
I'm looking and reading here that among the many things that retired educators are working on, one person referred to it as a meme farm, which floods social media. Tammy, talk about the importance of you know, messaging all this. It's, you know, how do you get out of your own you know, inner loop and end up talking to the general public, whether through social media or otherwise?
Well, I think as retired educators, now what we're doing is we're teaching adults and we're trying to get them to see the contrast between two different candidates teaching them about the issues that they might not necessarily know that much about. And I think that creating informed citizens is something that I've always been really concerned about. And so that's the things that we do in WEAC Retired are a perfect retirement project for me.
Now, you're retired from active teaching now, but I dare say every one of you was still actively teaching in the early days of what has now become a 16-year run of the legislature not funding public schools to keep up with inflation. It's led to record amounts of school referendums, and that probably will be the case this spring as well. Tom, to what degree are retired educators limiting themselves to, you know, classroom issues versus becoming advocates in the community as these referendums come up?
Oh, definitely at local and at state levels, you will find loads of retired educators, both communicating directly or at rallies. And if you remember last May, there was a huge budget rally for our education budget in Madison, and it was filled with those of us who are retired educators.
And so, Mary, does that mean that, you know, at any given point, it's the retired educators that are instrumental in trying to get referendums passed?
Yeah, we have both a knowledge about why it's important and what has happened to funding for public schools, but we also care deeply about those issues and know that the community does if they understand what's been happening. So when you're involved locally, which we have the time to do if we're not in the classroom, we can explain to people exactly what the differences are and why public schools are struggling in order to keep those doors open and offer the kind of education that even small school districts across Wisconsin have always done to better prepare our students and our future in Wisconsin to be a part of what's coming.
Oh, and Tammy, you know, when Mary says, you know, as people learn, you know, what's what, to me, number one on that list has always been if more people understood just how much is, you know, skimmed off the top of public our funding our public schools and given to voucher schools instead. I mean, that's, you're retired, but you could probably have a full-time job just trying to educate people on the complexities of the school funding formula and what it really means, what they're really paying for.
That's correct. And it is a complicated issue for many people who don't necessarily follow it. So it's important for us to talk about it. And other things that we do, we also go, we're able, because we're not being paid anymore, to go to our local school board meetings and to speak at those meetings and to actively support pro-education candidates that we're hoping will also forward some of these concerns that we have.
So not being, you know, in the classroom now, Tom, does that give retired educators a bit more, I don't know, freedom is the right word, to, you know, to speak more freely and frankly about what the current situation is? And you know, does that invite, you know, does that invite more pushback from friends and neighbors, or is this a healthy dialogue?
I think that it is both, certainly. But what are they going to do? They're not going to fire us. So we don't have to worry about that. So having said that, we bring, each of us bring over 30 years each. Multiply that times the 11,500 some members, and you have an idea of how much experience we each bring to our communities and at the state level to what we know about, be it state funding or how schools are run.
And you mentioned, did you say 11,000 members now?
11,500.
Wow, that is impressive. And Mary, that includes annual conferences. I know that I was very fortunate to be invited to speak to the last statewide conference there. So are you, I mean, that's an impressive number, but I would imagine you still do outreach, that there are other retired educators that should know about the group or reasons why they should join.
Oh, absolutely. Being a member of WEAC Retired is a really important part of who we were as professionals. And although we go in retirement to do lots of other things, some of which are really a lot of fun and educational, but not necessarily school related, it is really important for us to be a part of the network. And a number of people join WEAC Retired because we got to know each other as working professionals. We were part of Department of Public Instruction committees, working on curriculum standards, working on improving schools. We were part of our union in order to advocate for those very funding issues. And that network of people across the state don't disengage just because you retire.
Yeah. So in conclusion, Tammy, I think, you know, do you think it's a good idea if members of the general public, if they know of a retired educator, you know, go ahead and strike up a conversation? They're probably not going to hit you with the "I'm retired, I don't deal with that anymore." Should people see their neighbors who are retired educators as an asset that way?
I think so. I mean, I know I'm sure for all of us that we do have neighbors that ask us about different topics that they just heard about and how do we feel about it. I know when I go back to the school board meetings, because I live in the school district that I worked in, that everybody's real happy to see me and ask me, tell me what's going on in the schools and ask me if I can help with different things. So I think it's something that happens with all of us.
I'm sure also one of the first questions anybody asks you when they hear you're a retired educator is, how did you do it? Because it's a role so few people, you know, can do, and more people need to frankly appreciate it. But Tammy Johnson, Mary Bell, Tom Zagan, thank you very much for telling us more about WEAC Retired and the work you're doing in the community. It's so greatly appreciated, and hope you all have a great day.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Pat. We came to this country. We were kings and queens. Never poor.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
Shop Menards today and save big money. Put the finishing touches on your kitchen or bathroom with a new faucet from Moen. Moen creates faucets that feature innovative technology and have a timeless aesthetic. Available in a variety of styles and finishes, find the perfect faucet for your home with Moen's wide selection of kitchen and bathroom faucets. Get the Mica 2-handle widespread matte black bath faucet for $149.99. Sale price is good through February 4th. Now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Is it Saturday night yet? Hey folks, Jimmy K here. Join me, Rocker, and Terry Barr for Max Inc. Saturday Night. It's your weekly look at the Wisconsin music scene with a lot of fun, debut music, interviews with the artist, and live in the lair. It's Max Inc. on Saturday night across the Civic Media Radio Network, Saturday night, 6 to 10 p.m., and grab the podcast at maxincradio.com. It's Max Inc. on Civic Media. We are local music.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Thank you for listening to this weekend's edition of the Civic Media Spotlight. We round out this weekend with The Don Rosen Show being joined by Shay King, the head of business development for the Racine Public Library, for a conversation about what's going on in the library down in southeastern Wisconsin, along with what libraries do across the state of Wisconsin. Stay up to date with what's going on in your community and across the state of Wisconsin by following Civic Media and our radio stations on social media.
Topics with Shay King, head of business development for the Racine Public Library. And let's talk about some of the reading challenges you have. You know, we forget that the public library isn't just for reading, but it's a big part of the library.
Mm-hmm.
We got a couple of books now. Now, I'm not a big reader, but I love my wife reads to me. She'll take the book. These are books about Racine.
Oh,
and they're people's lives and how they grew up in Racine. In the 40s, 50s, 60s, and she's reading the books to me because she's a great reader, and she's a great speaker, so she reads these books, and I love listening. She's like listening to books, audiobooks, and she reads these to me, and I love listening to her, so that's how we do our reading. I lay back in bed, and she reads them.
Well, that's delightful.
Yeah, she loves it. I said, well, let me read. No, I'll read. Good, because I didn't want to read. I just made the offer. So talk about some reading challenges going on at the library.
Yeah, so reading challenges are one of the ways in which we try to encourage people who would like to read more but haven't quite figured out how to make it a huge priority in their lives to kind of incentivize them. So you can sign up for reading challenges at racinelibrary.beanstack.com.
B-E-A-N-S-T-A-C-K. EAN Stack, STACK.
That's right.
I spelled it.
Yeah. Good job.
Hey, I graduated grammar school.
And Beanstack will list for you different books that are part of different themes and different activities related to those themes. And so you can earn badges, you can earn points for completing the books, completing the challenges. And it's like a good way to track your reading and encourage yourself to enjoy the process a little bit more.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So, and you know, you can... And even if you're on computers, you still got to know how to read.
Yeah.
There are words on the computer, and you have to know how to read, and you will have to read for school.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you cheat with AI stuff, you're still going to know how to read it.
Well, and I think I remember a stat that even including adults, most people in the United States are reading at not even quite a college level on average. Mm. So there is a literacy problem, and... we try to find ways to make it easier how we can.
We'll just get married and have your wife read to you. That'll work. Okay, so is that that's the reading challenges you have now? We have more?
Yeah, so we have a couple going on right now. We just finished our winter reading challenge. That one ended in January. So now that we're transitioning into Black History Month, you can read books by Black authors about Black issues, history, of course. And we also have all year long, we have the Pride 365 reading challenge, which is all about celebrating who you are and who you love.
Well, that's nice. I mean, there's always something. Who comes up with all these ideas at the library, by the way?
So I think some of these are developed by our library system. I think some of them are developed by Beanstack in partnership with other libraries. So there's actually lots of libraries around the state, at least, if not broader, that are doing the same challenges for their patrons. So you're participating in a little bit of a statewide or even maybe a national challenge when you do it.
Yeah, now, let me be honest. Does somebody come in and say, hey, listen, I found out what the Dubuque Public Library is doing. I think we can steal this idea. Do you do that kind of stuff? I would do it.
Yeah, we do. We share all the time.
Not share. I said steal. Radio stations do it all the time. What a great contest idea. I think I'll do that.
I mean, we like to try to do it honorably, but...
We borrowed that idea. We shared it. That's great.
We checked it out.
Okay, these are the programs for next week, the Anti-Racism Zoom Book Club.
Yeah.
That comes up on Monday, February 5th, 1 to 3 p.m.
Yep, and that's every Monday. It's actually been a long-standing program.
Anti-Racism Zoom Book Club.
Yeah.
It's just what the title implies, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Exactly. They'll read books that basically give people an opportunity to talk about racism, because we find that often the first step to understanding or creating change is just learning how to have a conversation about it. If you can do that, you can accomplish everything else, pretty much.
Okay. Social service programs. Now, this is good if, let's say, you're an immigrant to this country and you've got to take the citizenship test, which I think every human being in this country should have to take that test. We'll be surprised how many people fail it.
Right? I flunk it probably.
I saw the questions once. We looked it up online. And I don't know if I can get a passing grade on that test. Yet these people who take it for citizenship do very well on it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a shame on us for not knowing this
stuff. They have to work 10 times as hard.
And so tell us about some of the classes coming up.
Yeah, so classes for English citizenship exam, that is hosted by Voces de la Frontera at the library. It's every Wednesday this year from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. in the Business Center. Anybody who wants to participate must have had a residency card for 5 to 14 years, or you have to have been married to a U.S. citizen for 5 to 14 years. So it's very specific, but you can register by contacting the hosts at 414-236-0415 or 262-346-4027.
Is this information on the public library website?
It is.
Okay, so in case you missed it, it's there. And if you want to hear it again, this show will be podcast later on today at civicmedia.us or wrjn.com. More with Shay King, head of business development for the Racine Public Library, coming up in a moment. 6:58, a Civic Media station, WRJN, hometown radio refreshed. Stay right where you are.
The Don Rosen Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WRJN weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows. From Birchwood to Poplar, this is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH, your home for news, talk, and sports. This is your hometown radio, refreshed. keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Hey, son. How are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it. Navigating without a compass, eyes waiting, started to wonder. Metamorphosis, loss of who you thought you was.
When your kid can't find the language, help them find the lyrics. Listen to the Sound It Out album and get tips and tools to start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
This is the Buzz of the North. WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News.